Welcome to Heal the Hurt, the podcast dedicated to guiding you on your journey to mental wellness and healing from trauma. Each episode, we delve into the heart of healing, exploring the paths to overcome trauma, regain strength, and reclaim joy in our lives. Whether you're taking your first steps toward recovery or you're well on your way, this is a place for connection, understanding, and real talk about the challenges and triumphs of the healing process. Together, we'll uncover insights, share stories, and embrace the power of resilience. So take a deep breath and let's begin the journey of healing together. This is Heal the Hurt, where your journey of transformation and hope starts now. Okay, welcome to this episode of the Heal the Hurt podcast. We are so glad that you are listening, so glad that you are joining us. We hope that this message today improves your life in some way, and I am extremely excited to introduce my friend McKenna. McKenna, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
We want to know who you are. Okay. And how did we cross paths? How did we decide that we're going to do this today?
I know. I think that everything happens for a reason. And that's kind of the foundation of a phrase that I live by, faith that we, in the path that we're on, in the journey that we're on, the people we come in contact with, and who we lose contact with, or how we ebb and flow through life, is just everything happens for a reason. So I think that's what brought us here today, was purpose and connection. I am a wife. I just celebrated our 14th anniversary.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I have 4 children. And they're my best friends, almost 13, almost 12, 8 and 5.
Wow.
And I'm currently studying in the BSW program at the Bachelor's of Social Work at UVU. And I've always, I've always been a proponent of resources. But in the last, through my journey, 4 or 5 years, I've been sharing my story and bringing awareness, education, and advocacy towards mental health. I was grew up in the pageant world. And now I am a proponent of just, I'm a chronic student. I feel like I'm just going to, I'm chronically wanting to learn.
I love that. So I love there that. I am. Well, thank you so much for being here. And traditionally with the Heal the Hurt podcast, we're bringing individuals who have a story to tell. And we always invite people to share something that happened along the journey, whether that was a hard thing or something motivating, a lesson that we've learned. And so throughout our discussion, I know that will be sprinkled throughout.
Yeah.
But I'm so fascinated in hearing some of your journey to where you're at today in your life. The energy that you possess, that you put out there, this safety, this healing, just kind of this loving, compassionate presence that you carry. Where did that come from? Were you born with that? Is that something you learned along the way?
I think that we are born innately good. And I think that we all have those components as a part of us. And I think that life and experiences kind of harden us. But I believe that life experience and, you know, faults that I've had and mistakes I've made have brought me to a place that we're all human. And we all make mistakes, and that making mistakes doesn't make us a bad person. And our shortcomings don't make us a bad person, and they don't make us who we are. They help us become who we're meant to be. And I think that we judge ourselves so harshly, and we start to judge others so harshly, that it creates this really toxic environment where I believe that if we allow ourselves grace, we in tune allow others grace. And that when we're judging others, we're really revealing a part of us that we're judging, and that there's a insecurity in part of us and that we look deeper into. So I still judge others. I still do and make mistakes, but I'm trying to create this habit that when we judge others, why am I judging that person? Okay, that's revealing a part of me. What part of me do I still need to heal? And through healing, there I've seen the beauty on the other side of pain. And so I embrace the parts of me that still need to heal. And I don't know if that answers your question, but I think that we all have it in us.
Yeah, it answers so much, because there's this part of us that goes, well, I learned not to do this thing anymore, whatever that was. And you mentioned judging, right?
Yeah.
So I'm not judgy at all. That particular action, that particular word, I think you can look at it from a couple of different ways. You know, if I'm trying so desperately to not be judgy, what's the opposite? Am I being naive? Mm. Am I being aloof to something? You know, I think there's, as a therapist, I joke that there's a difference, maybe it's not a joke, there's a difference between judging and observing or assessing, right? And perhaps that judginess or that judgment comes into play where there's harm.
Yeah.
That is a result, or even intended, right? But I love that you mentioned that part of myself. What is ill here? What is not congruent here? What is not at level of homeostasis?
Well, and I also think that judging is also a protection.
Yes.
Like, to protect us. And I'm trying to teach my kids, that, and I myself as well, I'm definitely not perfect, but being aware of what part of myself is this coming from? Is this coming from intuition? Like, I need to protect myself. This isn't safe. Or am I judging this person because of the way they look, or my internal biases, or am I being prejudiced, or am I actually feeling inside of me intuition? Mm-hmm. And I think that a big place we need to say is, am I coming from a place of love? Mm-hmm. Am I coming from a place of compassion? And I think that that can help us decipher intuition and judgment, because so often I'll be like, my daughter said, am I judging that person right now, or is he not a safe person? And I thought, that's a great question to ask ourselves. Mm-hmm. Am I coming from a place of love for this person? And do I just genuinely don't feel safe? Or am I judging him because I'm being biased?
Absolutely. In my work, I interact with a lot of people who are intoxicated.
Yeah.
Who are either homeless or unsheltered. There's serious mental illness.
Yeah.
You mentioned this effort in teaching your children. And in trying to teach my children right and wrong, good and bad, healthy and unhealthy, smart decisions versus less than smart, you know, decisions, things that will have an impact on their future, mm-hmm. for the better or for the worse, the risks and everything that way. sometimes driving downtown, making observations about who's walking around, who's there, right? And our little ones, innocent as they are, go, well, what's that? Tell me about that. That looks different.
Yeah.
You know? And so explaining, this is what it looks like when somebody is less fortunate. This is what it looks like when, yeah, perhaps somebody has made some hard decisions in their life, or has
bad choices.
Karma hasn't been good to them. Not karma. The universe hasn't been very good to them. You know? Maybe it's luck of the draw or lack of.
Right.
Right? When mental illness is present. You know? What it looks like when somebody is intoxicated. And not somewhat mildly inebriated, but we're talking some of the stuff that's happening now with the drugs that are available on the streets,
yeah,
the zombie drugs and everything that way, yeah, that has a tendency to scare our kids. Well, what is that? Am I safe here? It's not judgmental to say that doesn't look like something I should be a part of. That doesn't feel safe, or that person doesn't look safe to me. With compassion or curiosity,
yep,
yeah, there's nothing, in my opinion, nothing wrong with that.
Nothing it's when wrong with, if maybe I am that, I safe, let's not judge them as a person. They are in a state of mind where they can't make smart choices. So we're going to make a smart choice to, yeah, send them love, but say we're not going to interact with them. The best thing that I've loved to do with my kids are, there's these Instagram pages where it exposes them to that demographic and humanizes them, mm-hmm, and how they got to their, it's like Tales of the Street. There's people from Arizona that I love to watch, and they interview where they came from, how they got there, mm-hmm, or like people of New York City. And I love to follow Jimmy Darts and these perspectives of people who aren't people I would naturally run into in my daily life, but exposes me to the demographic to humanize them.
Yeah.
And my kids have gone through some heartache this year, and we'll jump on those Instagram pages and we'll watch these people's stories, and it humanizes them and helps them get to know them. Because I think the best way we can get to not judge others is to get to know and humanize them. Mm-hmm. So often we will say, oh, they're homeless. And that actually is dehumanizing,
yeah,
because it puts them into a clump of people and not them as an individual.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know, it's tricky. And I think that I've fallen into that many clumps, as we all do. We all get clumped into different dehumanizing categories. And so I think it's just something that we all need to be aware of when we're doing it and when it's happening to us.
it feels miserable when it's happening to us.
Yeah.
Right? We often feel, I'm so misunderstood, and that's not what I meant. That's not what I, you know, that's not what I think. And so that lack of connection, I think, really can create some struggle and pain. And so there's one of those phrases, you know, that I've heard for a long time, that connection is the opposite of addiction. And so this thing about addiction recovery, going, well, how am I supposed to get sober? How am I supposed to stay sober? What was the problem in the first place? What are the underlying issues? And I don't want to say always. I really try not to do the never or always kind of a thing. So I think the majority of the time there is some disconnect, whether it's emotional disconnect, relationships, even the mind as it fractures along the way as we endure traumas and hard things, you know, there are survival mechanisms that come into play.
Absolutely.
To try to protect us.
Yeah.
And so we might even sometimes be unkind to somebody to push them away, whether we're conscious about this or not, push them away because then they're no longer a threat to me.
It's easier to push people away, but I think the harder right is healthier for us than the easier wrong. If that makes sense. So,
Let me say that one more time.
It's okay. Let me see if I can remember what I said. It's easier. It's harder to do the right, and it's easier to do the wrong.
Yeah.
In the moment, but we're sacrificing what we want most for. I always say, don't sacrifice what you want most in the moment. Like, because whatever is the easier thing in the moment is usually the wrong choice. Mm-hmm. Usually the right thing takes time, and sacrificing what you want most in the moment for what you want long term. Like, don't make choices in the moment that sacrifices your long term goals.
Yeah.
And that waiting time and that growth. Like, my kids are growing so fast right now. They're having these growing pains. And I'm like, that's what it is. We're trying to, like, mend these moments because, like, you don't want to endure the pain. But, like, and I don't ever ask for trials. Like, don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. But the enduring, going to treatment, doing the hard things, committing to change is hard. But getting to the other side and seeing the beauty and the joy and the satisfaction that it brings you on the other side is, like, let's go. Like, when something else pops up, I'm like, okay, let's go. Because I know the reward on the other side is so much better than the moment band-aid that you put on in the moment.
Yeah. You made me think, and I'm going to ask you in a minute to share some of your stuff that way. So often if I revel in my own, revel is not the word, but if I kind of wallow in my own, man, that was really hard. Mm-hmm. Or this is really hard. This sucks. I wish it was X, Y, and Z.
Right.
When we talk about regrets and we look back and go, well, I wish I'd done this, I wish I'd done that, or whatever. If we really dissect that and look, had we made different choices along the way, how do we know that we'd be in a position where we are now? And that doesn't mean that all of our dreams have come true, that everything's perfect. Mm-hmm. But something that you're suggesting is, wow, I've gone through some hard things. I've learned lessons from that. That's trained me. That's taught me. That's refined me. Mm-hmm. Now perhaps I'm more resilient now. Yeah, I'm not going, I dare you, bring it on, no, you know.
But I feel more prepared.
Yeah.
Like, I think when we're, I use the analogy of, like, when I decided to take medication, it's like I was just drowning. I was just, like, living to the next moment, coming up for breath, and then just, like, drowning. And you can use that with any sort of tool, like, so when I took medication, it kind of handed me a raft so I could just, like, assess. Or you could even say, like, a life jacket where I was just like, okay, I can breathe and I can assess. Okay, then you go through another challenge. You get a raft. Then you pick up an oar. And then you have control over what direction you're going in right now or wherever you're going. And you can kind of say, well, eventually I may walk my boat up to shore and decide that I can get off medication, but maybe not. But then I can get to solid ground and, like, get grounded. And I think that that's what it is when you're climbing a mountain. You might be starting with just your hands and it looks so hard and daunting. But then you get some equipment as you go and you kind of learn. Now I feel like I've got, like, everything in pack. Like, hey, well, the next mountain's coming. However, we've gotten to this point and I've picked up so many skill sets and tools that I know that I'm capable to take on the next challenge. Mm-hmm. Because I almost want to see what tool I need next, because I feel so much more empowered each time I overcome something hard. I don't know.
I love that. I love that.
There were days where I didn't think that I was capable, or I didn't want to be here. I felt like the world was better off without me. My family was better off without me, because I was doing them a favor by, like, there were definitely days that were dark that I didn't think I was, could do it, or I didn't think I was strong enough or wanted or needed. So there were definite dark days. That's for sure. So
can I ask you?
Yeah.
How did you get there? How did you get to that point when you mentioned the dark days? What took you there?
I think you lose sight of who you are by trying to keep up with what you should be doing. That we lose ourselves. And we get caught up in, I should be doing this. I should be doing that. And I lost my connection to Christ. And I believe that Jesus is my Christ. And I believe in a Heavenly Father. And I believe in angels. And I think we get, have you seen the show? Oh my gosh. Oh, Soul. Have you seen Soul? It's a Disney show.
Yeah.
And they talk about people who are still alive, but they're dead. Mm-hmm. And they're just going through the motions of life, but they've lost their connection to who they are. And I think that as I got married young, which I'm so grateful for all the choices I made, but in the moment, like, I got married young, I had back-to-back kids, and I was just doing all the things I should be doing, that I was just shooting all over myself. Whoever came up with that, I think it's amazing, because I think that's where it started, was I was so worried about the external perspectives that I lost connection with who I was, and that I was never measuring up. I was never fulfilling the things I thought I should be doing as a daughter, as a mother, as a wife, as a member of a religion, and I member of a community. I was just like, well, I guess I just suck. And I think that's really how it started. And I started having babies back to back, and hormones came into play, and I think childhood trauma came into play, and it all just compounded. And we're taught, don't dwell on the past. But in the healing journey, I've realized that, like, I saw a quote again, I don't know who came up with this, but it really hit me, that like an arrow, in order for it to fly, you have to pull it back. You kind of have to go back and say, okay, let's rewind a little bit. How did I get here? And go back and think, okay, now from here, let's, like, rebuild. So it's like, I had to deconstruct to reconstruct every aspect of my life, religion, you know, motherhood, wife, everything, and rebuild with the intent of a connection to my higher power.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes any sense.
That makes all the sense in the world to me, and I love that. I, for some reason, got this vision of when an older building is going to be resold and repurposed for something. And I'm so fascinated by who makes the decision and how do they decide whether we're going to demolish this thing and start over from the ground up, or we're going to tear down the majority of it, keep the structure in place, reinforce it, and keep that intact, and then build from there.
I completely demoed my building. Like, came in like a wrecking ball, Miley Cyrus.
Yeah.
And I just wrecked the whole
thing. Miley.
Hi, Miley. And I started with, what do I believe? Like, it really was this deconstruct. I stripped myself of every belief I've ever been taught. It was, is God real? What do I believe? Is there a God? And then I went to, okay, I believe in God. Jesus, are you my Christ? And he, over time, like, that simple question, he showed him. It was almost like he was so excited to show himself to me. And it instantly was like, okay. And then I believe that Heavenly Father, Jesus Christ, and the Holy Ghost are three entities. So I thought, okay, what do I believe in the Holy Ghost? And it was this whole restructure of myself. And that had to be my foundation and my anchor. And then it was, you know, everything else based off of that. But I felt once I had that structure of, and I believe whatever that it looks like for whoever, it can look, the way I believe, I don't think is everyone else's belief or should be, right? You figure that out for yourself. But from there and that anchor, I could progress forward and then always come back to. So there were moments in my treatment journey, like going to, so I've been many times, I drove myself to a behavior hospital. I should have been there many other times. But the moment that I knew I needed, well, it was kind of intervention with my husband, very lovingly. Mm-hmm. He did a great job on getting me to treatment. And going, I don't even know if our marriage is going to last. So we had to get to that moment of deconstructing our marriage.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's almost like life, but in phases. It was like a remodel in many different phases to the point where I had to deconstruct mothering. I had to get back to the basics with my oldest, where in therapy, I had to hold her like a baby because I was so emotionally unhealthy with postpartum depression and anxiety and rage that we didn't connect quickly. Like I did, there was a disconnect that I actually had to sit and hold her. But it was going back to that moment of like, let me hold you like a baby, and like letting her play with my hair and really reconstructing our relationships mm-hmm. with each one of my children. So it was like life as you know it had to rebuild, but we coming back to the basics of like Christ and love and compassion and grace and commitment to each other. And so now I feel like, I was even thinking the other day, I was like, wow, like the last 2 years of my marriage, I've always loved my husband, and I've always, you know, been so grateful, but we've just like, it's so much better.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh my gosh, we're in the best place ever. And I just want to be with him all the time. And I love him so much. And it's like, I was kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop, but it's not going to, because we have built, we deconstructed to reconstruct. We've created this beautiful life, which challenges will come, but come what may.
That's the phrase you just used, come what may. I use that a lot, both in this work and in my own life. And again, it's not, come on, bring it on, throw whatever, like I'm, yeah. I want to dare the universe or my higher power to trial me, you know, but it's, look, I've got the confidence that I can handle it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to have to.
No, yeah.
I'd like it to be a little simpler, a little easier, and those kinds of things.
But whatever I signed up for on the other side that I know I need to go through to become who I'm meant to be, I embrace it.
Mm-hmm.
Like if God goes, okay, this is what's next, come what may, okay, if this is helping me create to be my best self and reach my full potential, mm-hmm. I want it. But do I want to go to war? No, but if that's what I need to do to be who I'm meant to be, then come what may.
If it's okay with you, I want to share an experience I had.
Absolutely.
Years ago, and then I want to get back into where you're at on the journey. I just feel impressed to share this. I've shared this with a few people in my world. I don't know that I've ever shared it. Certainly not publicly this way. But I had some experiences in my life where I felt disconnected from my higher power. I felt like maybe I was being punished or things weren't fair. And I don't know, to this day, I don't know if it was a daydream, if it was my imagination, if I fell asleep and I was actually like my subconscious was going to this place, or if this was literally a vision. I don't know. I know what I'd like to think. I know what it feels like.
And that's all that matters.
Yeah. Thank you.
It's your story. And just know that that's all that matters.
So I preface it with that, but yeah. You mentioned UVU. I'm a Wolverine. I got my bachelor's there. I think the same program as you. Yeah. And, in this vision, in this dream, I walked into what looked like, I don't even know if it's still there, but the grand ballroom at mm-hmm. UVU. Mm-hmm. I think it's different now. They've had some renovations and additions. But I walked into this just huge ballroom, and it wasn't busy. There weren't like a bunch of things on the wall. It was just, but it also wasn't sterile and bare that way. Just felt peaceful. It was bright and clean. And I walked in, and very quickly I realized this is God's office. And I look up, and he's there at the other end, almost on this platform, like raised up, and then his desk. And he's sitting there in like an office chair. And I'm like, what's going on here? And I'm taking it all in. There are no audible words spoken. But it's as if we're exchanging,
yeah,
just like you and I are now.
Yeah.
And I approach.
Call that the heavenly language.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. I approach and he's there's like this book that he's sliding over to the other side of his desk. And there's like this pile of stuff over here, like pile of books and things. And he looks up at me and gets a book and puts it in front of him. And he looks at me again. And very quickly, I realize that's the story of my life.
Wow.
And he begins to turn the pages. And there are moments as he's reading. And I'm it's as if I'm in his eyes. Mm-hmm. I'm seeing it just as he is. There are moments where he smiles and he laughs. And I'm told that those are the happy moments of my life. Those are the celebrations, the good things, right? And there are moments where he turns and he's struck with pain. Those are the hard times, the sorrows, the scary things. And there's this feeling that I have that, like, please no, like, how am I going to do that? How am I supposed to handle that? And there's this sentiment from him that I perceive that he goes, I wish there was a different way. This is your story. You do not have to do this alone. This is your path. But I'm going to support you. I'm going to help you along the way. You're going to have the tools, the resources, and everything that way. So perhaps reluctantly, I'm like, okay, you must know better than me. And he continues turning and it goes back and forth. Happy times, giggles, smiles, proudness, probably, you know. And then again, those hard things. At the end of the book, he turns it, right? He closes the book and he, so to speak, stamps his approval and moves it over to this other pile, which I very quickly realized that was the approved pile. Of every soul, everybody's story. God knew that story. For me, God knew that story before I came here.
Yeah.
And I knew it too. Mm-hmm. And even reluctantly, perhaps, I said, okay,
mm-hmm.
I'll go do that.
Yeah.
You know, and there are those moments in life, we kind of referenced this earlier, where it's like, man, this is really hard. But I have purpose.
Mm-hmm.
I have a belief in where I'm going, what I'm here for, what I'm supposed to be doing for myself as a husband, as a father, and a brother, and a friend, and a son, and all these things. I'd love for it to be easier, simpler at times. But I also don't want it to be boring.
Mm-hmm.
I also don't want it to be that simple because of the risk of apathy and kind of like, well, it's, you know, let me mail it in.
That's not what we learn.
Not at all.
Not where we grow.
Yeah, and I think, okay, had I, had this not happened in my life, had this not happened, had I not done this, where could I be?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I'd appreciate things the way that I do.
Yeah.
And that level of appreciation and perhaps understanding and awareness, I'm not giving that up.
Mm-mm.
I'm not willing to let go of that for an easier
exactly.
last 40 years of my life. I just turned 40 this year.
Oh,
and so great. I'm not interested in fact, is it the Tim McGraw song, My Next 30? When I turned 40, I was like, that song needs to be my next 40 years. You know?
Yeah.
He needs to do a recap.
It's just those experiences enhance our lives and we get a new lens.
Yeah.
And you just want to keep seeing more. Like you crave more. The more you get a little taste, the more you want more.
Right.
And so I think you got a little taste of like your full potential.
Yeah. There's purpose in this pain. And yeah, I don't think we enjoy it. We're not seeking it out.
No.
But we can take that step back and go, there's a purpose behind this. And I'm determined to figure out that purpose.
Yeah.
And to do something with it, with that message.
Absolutely.
So I want to know.
It was a beautiful story.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing.
Absolutely.
Thank you. I think trusting that you know that that was meant to be for you. I think so often for the listeners that are hearing, like you need to trust yourself when you have those spiritual experiences. So often we're told only certain people have those connections. Each individual on this earth has a special connection with their Christ and their Heavenly Father. And I challenge you to seek that higher power and to trust yourself when you get those visions or those intuitions or those thoughts. Just trust yourself.
I love that. Thank you. What made you to decide to take yourself to the hospital that you referenced? Like, yeah. What was the, you mentioned like intervention with your loving husband and those kinds of things, but like, what was that decision? What was that factor that said, I got to drive myself in?
Yeah. So the first time was when my son, my fourth, was probably 6 months old. No, December, January, March, April, 4 months old. And I lost it. I started having this rage and this anger, and actually I'm writing a research paper last night that we don't talk about anger and rage in adulthood as a sign of depression. We only talk about it in adolescence and youth and in children, but there are research studies. When I read last night, they're saying, well, it doesn't just stop when you become an adult. You still have anger and that sign of depression and anxiety. And so I was rageful. I had postpartum rage. And I kind of would disconnect from my body. And it was like an out-of-body experience where we think so often like we have control. It's mind over matter. And so often they're like, in my experience, like my therapist, my psychiatrist at my treatment center, and I'll get there, would explain to my husband she didn't have control. And there was a lack of control because of the imbalances of the chemicals in her body. And so I just remember, but then when my soul comes back in, that's where the shame and the guilt. So when you would detach... and it was like I'd watch myself, like I would destroy everything. I threw a chair against the wall, I'd break handles on the door. Like my children, it was traumatizing for them. And they've had to heal from that as well. So eliminating, but when I'd come back in, there's shame and guilt, and they deserve better. And your soul would like come in and out. My soul would come in and out. I don't know how else to explain it. But then all of a sudden it was like, I have to go. I have to leave. And then I was fighting and then I'd flight. So then I would just run away. And then I remember in those moments where I was like, I have to get out of here. I have to get out of here. And I would just like, I did irrational things and I would just pack a bag and I would just run out the door.
Yeah.
And the shame and the guilt would overtake me. And it was just this like darkest place ever. And I would think I need to not be here anymore as a favor to my family because they deserve better. But then I had this like weird thought, and it's not weird, but just that an angel, I really think, just like put this little thought in my head, like, McKenna, you're meant to be here. But you chose this. We kind of this thing. And it was, we're not meant to be this way. Like, I'm like, I chose this. Like, men are, but this is like, why did I choose this? And then I started going through all the things of like, why did I choose to come to Earth to endure such pain and heartache? And I started going through all my five senses, you know, hearing, touch, feel, emotion. Like, I believe that on the other side, there's so much. I'm hoping I'm articulating this okay. But in this moment, I was like, okay, I chose to be here. Life is beautiful. Let's go through the senses. I can see, I can talk, I can hug my baby. So then I started thinking about like, when I'm an angel, yeah, I have so much more knowledge and peace and whatever. But as a human, I get to do things angels don't get to do. Mm. And that's embrace. That's eat food. That's to smell even the nasty things and the good things. Yeah. And I mean, even like the rain on our face, like they don't get to experience those experiences us as humans. So there really is beauty in this. So then I thought men are that they might have joy. I'm not experiencing joy, so... how do I get there? So I had this thought, call my friend. She runs Cirque Lodge and she got me to a behavior hospital. And it was there where I just collapsed. And that's how I initially got there. And that was the moment where like we realized I needed help. But then just because you choose to heal doesn't mean it's upwards. It's zigzagging up and down and backwards. But that was the first time. But I had multiple instances like that until... I was doing really good. And I think each time, and I think addicts can relate to this too, we call it a relapse. And I don't like that phrase because it sounds like we're like back at the beginning. But I didn't ever feel like I was back at the beginning because at the beginning I didn't have the knowledge and skill sets and tools. I just kept kind of looping around, progressively like looping forward. Kind of like this... okay, we're going back a little bit, but not all the way back. You've still learned a lot and you've still progressed. So let's see what we need to do. And I think that's an important concept to remember is that you're not relapsing. You're just lapsing back around. You're peeling another layer back and you're still progressing, and allow yourself some grace. But it wasn't until my husband like sat me down. I relapsed I lapsed again, but it was a place I never thought I'd see again. And my husband sat me down, mild intervention. We can't live like this anymore. I found a treatment facility that you're going to go to for, like, if you choose to go to for 30 days. Mm-hmm. And he had every excuse covered. Like, what about the kids? Covered. Mm-hmm. You know, what about this? Covered. And he just said, because we love each other so much. But we both knew we couldn't live like this anymore. So he's like, I think the next step is you need to go to treatment. You really need to, like, really nip and tuck and just really zip up all these I don't want to use the word bad, but just, like, you deserve better. We deserve better. Yeah. Like, go. So I went.
I love it.
I don't know if that made any sense at all, but it's a wild ride.
Yeah. Yeah, it all made sense. And I love that too, because so often there's this defeating shame that I knew better. How did I let this happen again? And for me, there have been two separate times in my life where I had 3 years. Like, I'm doing well.
Yeah.
3 years and I lost it. And whether that's complacency, arrogance, oh, I don't need to do this anymore. You know, I'm all better.
Uh-huh.
And I know what that looks like, and that's terrifying.
Well, even platforms that we have in the mental health education, mental health world, advocacy, therapy. And I was speaking to children and adults and all these things. I'm like, wow, I'm a fraud. But it was almost like, I think it's important that we share those moments where we are too on our own journey to let people know that it's okay to embrace what's next. And going on your journey doesn't mean you're a fraud. You're human. Mm-hmm. And that humanizes you. And that, I believe, empowers. I hope that letting people know through my journey that we still are, like, look and constantly don't get complacent, don't get arrogant. Yeah. And it's a process. But if we all come together and just support each other, then I think maybe we'll embrace our journeys more. But we're not frauds.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. We're really not. We're just, I hope that we can help people feel inspired to continue to get the help that they need.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's one of the reasons I want to get connected more with people like you who have these other networks and have that voice so that we can share the message. Because there are so many people, there are people in my life I love and adore who struggle. And I'm not exempt from any of this, right?
No one is, yeah.
But that struggle is there, and we go, well, I can't go to treatment. I can't do this work, or it's expensive, or I can't leave work, or I can't leave my family. There's all the reasons not to go.
Yeah.
And it's not this, well, everyone should go to rehab. No. That's not,
right.
I don't believe that for one bit. But if what I'm doing right now, I believe this is a universal statement. If what I'm doing now, whatever my treatment looks like, my self-care routine, my dailies, if what I'm doing right now isn't producing the results that I want, something has to change. And typically in a treatment setting, for example, if I'm doing, let's say I'm doing a therapy session every week. If that's sufficient for me and I'm doing well and I'm reaching my goals, I'm making progress, why would I go to rehab? Why would I go to treatment? It doesn't make sense. But if that's not adequate for me and sufficient for me, maybe I do two therapy sessions a week.
Yeah.
Maybe I rope in like a group therapy or some community, some meetings, some support groups or something like that. So maybe it's a few times a week that I'm connecting.
Yeah.
If that's sufficient, then great.
Yep.
When the time is right, reduce that, the intensity and frequency of those supports. But if it's not sufficient and adequate, I've got to step up another level of care. And we struggle with that so much because it suggests that we've failed. And it's not the case at all.
No, seeking help is strength.
Exactly. And I believe...
you're good.
Excuse me.
Oh, you're good.
I believe what you said earlier about the lapse versus relapse. And even in treatment centers, I would talk about that. Like, what is a relapse? It's not like I went out and had a rough weekend. That's more of a lapse. Lapse in judgment kind of a concept.
Lapse in judgment.
Whereas relapse is like, I went out for 6 months. disappeared from everybody, constant benders, whatever the case is, you know,
yeah.
back in the routine of the chaos, my chaos, right? That's like relapse. But lapse, I think, also has the potential to teach us how to peel back one more layer mm-hmm. and dig deeper, do right. more of that healing work. And so there are actually workshops that we'll do specific to shame and guilt
mm-hmm.
because we know people are going to experience that. We're going to experience that. Well, as the therapist, I'm supposed to model all the perfect behaviors, right? No, I'm a human as well.
Yeah.
A human who has struggles, a human who has emotions, a human who gets irritated, right? Who doesn't sleep all the time, you
right.
know, all of those things, right? I believe firmly that we are doing the best we can with what we've got at any given moment. And even though tomorrow I might mess up, today I'm saying I know better. Tomorrow, based on lack of sleep, illness, I might get horrible news, mental illness might creep in. Whatever it is, I might make a bad decision tomorrow, okay? Even though I knew better, there might have been circumstances around it where I was not consciously making that bad decision.
Yeah.
You know? And so again, it doesn't mean, oh, I'm back to square one. It's, of all the 100 decisions, if I made 90 perfectly, don't throw those out.
Yeah.
But let's focus on the 10 or whatever it is and fix them.
Well, I think it comes full circle to your story that you had with Heavenly Father, that he gave his stamp of approval of the good. And that I think it's important through the shame and guilt, and something that I always say to individuals that reach out to me, that there's nothing you can say, there's nothing that you've done or will do that will ever make me love you less. If anything, when we're vulnerable and we embrace and trust, knowing that there's nothing that we can do or will do or have done that will take your worth away or love from your Heavenly Father. That so often we make bad choices, we slip into shame, like, I'm not worthy, I suck, I'm all this. It's like, your Heavenly Father gave your stamp of approval for your journey through the good, the bad, and the ugly, even the ugly. And I remember at treatment when I went and my husband dropped me off, I thought, you know, this is a month program, but I bet I'm not that bad. Mm-hmm. I bet they'll let me go. They're not going to know what to do with me because
right.
I'm not.
Right.
And I think because we so often just get into this rhythm of, like, unhappiness that we just think it's our normal and that it's okay. But I want to tell people, you deserve pure joy and yeah. happiness, because men are, they might have joy, but we think, like, oh, I'm just going to endure. It's not that bad. But, like, in treatment, there were people who I looked at like, oh, they're so bad, or, oh, I feel so sad for them. They were doing the same thing to me. And I think so often we just have to remember, like, you deserve joy and happiness.
Yeah.
You don't need to settle, and you're worthy of love no matter mm-hmm. what you've done or will do. Like, God's already given his stamp of approval. He doesn't take that back. Like, that's it.
Yeah, I love that. One of those, it kind of reminded me of that piece of judgment or judginess of, like, I'm not as bad as these people, and they're simultaneously perhaps thinking the same of me.
Yeah.
And then other times where it's like, your pain's not that bad. That's not good enough.
Oh my gosh.
Like, your trial isn't that bad.
Oh,
what are you
gosh.
Doing here? You know, and
you
so it doesn't matter.
I got that.
I bet.
Too. On the outside,
yeah.
our life looked like all the shoulds were great.
Yeah.
And people, and so often in the social work world,
yes.
they believe that we're taught that so often we need funding, we need this, and if you have money, then you're great. And I think that we have to shift that perspective, because I've had some conversations even with some professors about this, that just because we're so taken over, like, we've got to write proposals for money, that it's all about getting people money, honestly, to get resources, that we've completely dismissed people who on the outside look like they have it together because they have money. They're exempt and they don't need help, and we don't need, it's unethical. I've been told that, unethical to help them because they're in a place, I'm like, of financial stability. or they look like they're doing just fine, so they're exempt.
They don't need us.
They don't need us. We have to focus on the vulnerable. But I said, on the vulnerable populations. And then I'll say, well, what if I told you, because I've said this, that 68% of our suicides in America were the white male. To me, that's a vulnerable population too. Is anyone exempt from help? No. Or exempt from trials or tribulations? Right. Or is anyone, just because of their financial stability or external success, make them not qualified for help because they don't struggle? I'm like, hell no.
Right.
Every single human, I believe, is a vulnerable population.
Yeah.
And I know that there are vulnerable populations and there are privilege and there are vulnerable populations, but I hate the idea of there's just like, you get help, you deserve help, or you don't deserve help. And I think we all deserve to be happy. And if you're struggling, just because externally you look like you're doing great or you have the external factors, I want you to peel back all of those, because God doesn't care about any of those. He wants you to be happy and he wants you to seek help. You deserve to be happy regardless of any success or no success. As a human being, you're a child of God.
I get this question a lot. And as a therapist and a social worker, we have these ethics where certain lines we can't cross. And I have my own philosophies, my own beliefs, my own values, and those kinds of things. And that influences who I am as a human, but it doesn't affect my ability to work with people. For example, people of a different belief system than me, people of different cultures than me, and those kinds of things. That ethical safety and kind of neutrality is pushed on us so much. And we know how to be neutral. We know how to. It doesn't mean we always are neutral. So that's kind of the setup to this question. I hear all the time, we were talking earlier about kind of 12 steps and many people's, my perceived people's resistance to the 12 steps and those programs, where there comes into play a higher power, and people will reject that. And so often I hear the question and pose the question, well, if there was a God, why would he let that happen? Why would he allow that? If he's so loving, why would he allow his child, right? His child to go through that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I have my own beliefs around that. And I go, okay, if you're my client, here's my response. If you're my loved one or my friend, or, you know, if we're speaking here and it's not so much I'm being your therapist, I have I feel a little bit more freedom to share the vivid, genuine, transparent beliefs around that. But I'm curious about your response.
I think it's a beautiful question. I think that it's a question that I would answer with a question. I think that's a great, why would Heavenly Father or your God allow this to happen? Let's walk through that. Let's peel back. I think that that helps you ask yourself, why? Why would he let something like this happen? And I think that my response would be that, so when my sister passed away just last April, she's my sister-in-law, and this is another personal story, but I had a dream too, and she came to me and she said that this was, because I kept begging her to stay. Begging her to stay. Your kids need you. We need you. I love you. I don't want you to go. This can't be the way. This can't be the way that these children are going to lose their mom, that my brother's going to lose his wife. This can't, these kids raised without their mom. Like, this can't be the way. And she put her hand on my heart and she said, everything is as it should be. Every living thing on this earth has a plan. And this is my plan. And so I would say that, lean into that question to help build your relationship with Christ. And people think it's so complex to ask a question, but my favorite thing is, ask and you shall receive. You really will be shown your question if you genuinely open yourself to ask that question with a question. Ask and it will be shown unto you, to know that, like, we knowingly signed up for the good, the hard, and the ugly on this earth because of we don't get to feel these things as angels. And I believe that we know we can experience the things we're experiencing on earth. And there really is beauty in pain, and there's beauty on the other side of pain. And so I think that leaning into that question and sitting in that question and genuinely asking that question and with an open heart and mind, that you will be shown that, you know, the way my sister put her hand on my heart and just said, this is my plan. Like, it is what it is. Like, everything is as it should be. That's it. Every living thing, every living thing from a blade of grass to a human being has a plan. My dog has a plan. Like, it's a living thing. Lean into faith. I don't know. I hope that that, and look, I look up, it is what it is right up there, you know, as I'm talking.
Yep.
So that was my moment.
Lift that up right there just to.
Oh, yeah. It is what it is. Like, I don't know how else to explain it other than, like, it's okay to ask those questions. It's okay to sit in that heart and feel the pain, but genuinely asking why, it will be shown to you. Like, I literally just begged my sister to stay, and she said, like, it's time. That was her plan. Her story, her book is closed, and it's moving on.
And it will be okay.
And it will be, and it is okay. Mm-hmm. It sucks.
There's we're going to have to talk about, who's your Cirque Lodge friend?
Oh, right now?
Yeah.
Brittany Harris. I love you.
Brittany, I love you too. Cirque Lodge is my home. Cirque Lodge is where I was trained to be a therapist.
Oh, cool.
Cirque Lodge hired me 4 different times. And in fact, Bev was going to be here today.
Really?
And we had to reschedule. We had to postpone. If you have opportunity, even when I've gone to UVU and said, come do your internship here. However, if you have the opportunity to go to Cirque Lodge, do it. Mm. Take that above anywhere else. They will teach you more than you could ever fathom.
Cool.
Ever. even the last time I left Cirque, for the first year or so, I still would answer the phone, Cirque Lodge, this is Chris. And I go, oh, oops. Cause it's just the most wonderful place, for healing and the culture of that healing. But Brittany probably doesn't remember this, but there was a time, I walked into her office for something and she said, we dealt with whatever that matter was. And she goes, how's it going? Good? But how's it going? And if you know her, she reads you more deeply than the words, right? And she knew I was dating somebody at the time. And I said, you know, and this is kind of a TMI, not a traditional TMI, but kind of like a, you know, my own stuff. But I said, I'm not sure. This person's amazing. But I don't know if it's right for me. Here are the concerns that I have. And I'm stuck with this kind of this question of, am I forcing something? Am I trying to make this happen for me to have my person, to find my person? And it's not right. Or am I having unrealistic expectations and that kind of a thing? And I need to maybe get out of my own way. And I walked out of her office. I don't remember the exact words that she said, but I left my office. And as I walked down the hallway from her office to mine, I prayed. And I'm constantly doing that in my head. And sometimes my swear is a prayer. But it's kind of that plea of like, help me, I can't. I don't know what I'm doing. But I said, I said, God, I at that point I was a single dad. One child, my oldest, who's now 17, and I just moved back from Arizona not too long before that. Wanted to get back to my life, but I said, I think I'm going to be a good husband. I think I'm a really good dad. I want more kids. This is my vision for my life. Like, why isn't this happening for me? Or like, give me clarity. And I also said, but if that's not your vision, if there's something else for me, if my family's going to need me, or there's some other endeavor with my career and I'm needed in some other capacity, I don't want that. But okay, like kind of this reluctance, like I'm acknowledging maybe my plan isn't right. Mm-hmm. So I'll kind of submit, but I turned it over and I just, I got clarity, realized the circumstances I was in were not right. And I got, 2 days later, got a text from my now wife, who I'd tried to date years before, and she was not having it. We grew up together in Arizona. Her brother was my best friend. Her mom was my preschool teacher. All the sentiment and all those kinds of things, I was like, she's lovely, she's wonderful, all these things, you know. But she, I wasn't ready, right, back when I was trying to date her. And I got that message, and she mentioned having a dream, and she's like, I don't want this to be weird, I don't want to creep you out or whatever, but I had this dream about you. And I just literally, same hallway, as I got that message, walking down the hallway to my office, just grinning, going, I'm going to marry this girl. Aww. That's the answer to that plea.
Right.
That's the answer to the prayer of, I'm doing my best to try to fulfill my values, what I think my purpose is. I'm feeling some resistance, whatever it is, whether it's from this other person, whether it's the universe, whether I'm getting in my own way, but I want to notice it. Like, what's going on here? Help me out.
Right. And it was a hard, place to be. You asked for help, and within minutes, right? And sometimes it doesn't happen that quickly, but when you ask, sometimes he's just waiting for us to ask, and he'll answer quickly, right? So it's almost like you just need to lean into the questions, look for the answers, and they will be given to you. Honestly, I teach women, it's an acronym of WINGS, and I say that we all, as human beings, have wings, and it was our gift from God before we came to Earth. Yeah. And he said, these are your wings, and inside your wings are my gifts to you, and no one or nothing can take them from you. But the W stands for worth. You know, you're worthy if and when. We've gone over that. The I is one of my favorites, is intuition. It's not this arrogance that we have all the answers, but we have intuition, and he's gifted us. And the intuition is also your connection. But you know where to go and what to do. You have the answers within you. It's the trust. But you know what's best for you too, and to lean into that with him. And then the N is nirvana, and that men are that they might have joy. What you're going through from God when they ask those questions, why am I going through this? Why, if there's a God, why would he do this? That it is to help you achieve your ultimate peace and happiness. What he is giving you is a gift to help you reach your full potential, to have ultimate peace and happiness, nirvana. And the G and the S, the gifts and the strengths, that you have individual gifts and strengths that no one, not a single soul that's ever come or ever will be on this earth, and that your purpose will only be fulfilled by you. And so embracing your gifts and strengths, leaning in that everything is a gift from God, every experience is a gift from God, every rainstorm that you go through, every, you know, when you stub your toe, it's you leaning into those, the feelings that you, as a gift, like, you and the worth that you have. I mean, stubbing your toe isn't a good example, but that it's those little things that you go through, that it's physical pain that you don't get to experience on the other side.
Yeah.
And it's embracing, like, I'm embracing the rain on my face. I'm embracing those moments because that's part of being human and being here is a gift, and that you're worthy of everything that you have in your life. And that, to go back to people who, don't feel like their heart is, they compare their heart to other people's heart. I want you to know that your heart is your heart. And yes, there are people that are going through on paper worse than yours, but that your pain is your pain, and you deserve ultimate peace and happiness.
Yeah.
And that you still deserve to seek help. You still deserve to go through that trial, whether or not you think other people have it worse. It's a good perspective. It brings you gratitude for your life, and it brings perspective, but don't disregard your heart and what you're feeling, and don't dismiss that pain.
Right. Absolutely. I think there's the phrases like, find message in your message, or turn your mess into a message, find purpose in your pain. There was a time where I was not keen on, I didn't love all the cliches, because I wanted to push them away. Mm-hmm. There was that resistance, right? And now, so I still kind of scratch that itch of the skeptic or the cynic, right?
Yeah.
But the reality is, yes, this is teaching me something. Mm-hmm. My favorite movie is called Peaceful Warrior. Low budget film. Whenever people ask my favorite movie, and they, no one knows what that movie is, but we watched it in graduate school, and I was just awe-inspired. In fact, I tattooed the three rules of life from that, from the book. this is the exception. Usually the book is better than the movie. For me, it's the opposite. I loved the movie. It was so profound for me. In that, however, there's a hardship, there's a trial. And one of the characters says to another, I know this moment is really hard for you. Are you paying attention to it?
Ooh.
It is so profound to me. When we go through hard things, we can choose to run away and distract and deflect and escape. We can choose that. But whatever that trial is, it's not going away. Mm-mm. It's chasing us.
It is.
And often in the ways that I like to distract and deflect and run away, it's bringing with it some additional trauma.
It's clutching things as you're dragging it with
you.
Yep.
It's like a big sticky thing, you know? It's Home Alone time, so the sticky bandits, right? Like it's gathering, it's accumulating pain, misery, consequences. So
right.
Obviously, I can't deal with everything in this very moment, so I can delay, right, for a day, a week, whenever my next session is, those kinds of things. But I need to face the pain. I need to face the scary monsters. Because if I can get to know them and understand them, then I can defeat them.
Mm-hmm.
I can do something about it. And so, yes, every trial has a potential purpose and a potential message. I'm not interested in telling everybody else that suffering, that horror that you're going through, it happened for a reason. Mm-hmm. That can come across so insensitive. But I will say for my own pain, now I believe it to be true, but I believe that we can't go out
No, I agree.
Casually shouting that message.
It's true.
But in my own, same thing as before, I go, man, that really sucked. That was really hard. Why did that happen?
Mm-hmm.
X number of years of pain, and I was this kind of thing, and how could you do that? Whatever it is. Here's the purpose. And if I had to go through that so that I could be a messenger or I could be a helper or I could, heaven forbid, inspire somebody
mm-hmm.
to do their work or to see themselves as the world sees them, the
right.
beauty, the intelligence, the strength, the grace, and all of that, and they can quit hating themselves, fine. I'll go through it again. Again, I'm not saying bring it on.
Right.
You know, I don't want to suffer. I don't want that pain. But we turn that pain into a purpose and we do something about it.
Yep. It's beautiful.
You went to treatment in Arizona.
I did. So treatment was beautiful because it eliminated everything, and I was able to just focus on myself. I didn't have a lot of times people do IOP, which is fine, and I also did IOP too up at Recovery Ways in Murray.
Okay.
For a month after I got out too, which is like 20 hours a week, maybe not that much. Anyways, I'm just distracting. I believe that I was able to strip everything from my life externally from me so I could completely focus on myself. And I think the biggest thing that I learned there was that I'm capable and that I felt validated and that I felt like seen, I felt loved, and I felt empowered. Like I left treatment not knowing if my marriage was gonna make it. I left treatment not knowing, but yet I felt so empowered that I really am capable and empowered to overcome what comes my way. And I left hungry for more because I learned so much about my brain and how it operates and how, and that knowledge was a huge component in my healing process and understanding why I was the way I was. Or why I became certain things, or I neurons and rewiring of the brain, and just like was so empowering to me that the week I left treatment, I literally called UVU to go back to school because I was hungry to learn more because I felt so empowered from the things I learned, the skill sets I came and left. I literally hit the ground running going, I need more knowledge. I want more tools and skill sets. And I think that's the biggest thing I learned was that I'm capable. I never thought in a million years I would go back to school, ever. I didn't think I was capable. I didn't think I could even do it. I didn't even think I'd. But when I realized, like, I think I want to go back to school. I left feeling like I guess you could say a peaceful warrior. I felt like a warrior. Like, I didn't have to fight anymore. Yeah. I just felt like I could learn and grow. And that's just what I felt. I felt empowered, I think.
I love that.
I don't know if that makes any sense.
It does. But. It does more than... I think as we tell our story, we don't understand the impact that it has on other people. And sitting in this space with you, getting that impact and going, whoa... Like, I've gotten the chills 3 times. Mm. I'm familiar with the program, both programs that you mentioned, mm-hmm. Or both programs that you went to.
Yeah.
And love them. I think we don't recognize how many eyes are on us, how many people are paying attention. And so you're a constant example. For better or for worse, right or wrong, whether you want it or not, people are noticing. And so they're going to pay attention to that. Okay. I relate to McKenna for this reason, or this reason, or this reason, or I don't at all. But maybe I identify with her husband mm-hmm. or one of her children. Mm-hmm. Right? And so an audience member, a listener, is going, this is what I feel based on what she said and the vision that I've kind of gotten in even the small segment of your journey. And my invitation to our audience members, to those that ever listen to this, is what can you pull from this? Is there something that strikes a chord and you say, ooh, yeah, I healed from that. Or I've got some work to do. My hope is that this is an invitation.
Absolutely.
For everybody. You know, I had some hard things that happened when I was a younger person. And it's part of why I became a therapist. I thought I had done my work around all of that. I'd done therapy. I'd done treatment. I'd engaged in a lot of treatment-related things to try to better myself and heal as well. And when a few years ago, when my oldest was going through some hard things, I sat talking with my wife and said, exactly that. I thought I was over that. I thought I was all better, essentially. I've got some more work to do.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean that we're the worst. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that none of the supports or treatments or the effort was for nothing. It doesn't mean anything failed. It's here's an opportunity. Something's coming up again. I'm going to revisit that pain. I'm going to reapply the healing principles, right? We're never done. You said this at the beginning, like an ongoing student. Me too. We need to be, because we're not know-it-alls.
No.
You know?
Not even just a student at college, but a student of Christ, a student yeah. of Heavenly Father, a student to ourselves. Like, whatever yeah. that may be, our higher power, being open to being taught mm-hmm. can help us heal.
Yeah. There's more stuff. In fact, there's somebody that Brittany knows that I learned a great deal from, who was always curious about how things worked. And one time we were working together, and I think somebody's vehicle got locked, the keys got locked in the car or something like that. And he was so inspired and curious about the person who came to the rescue. This device that you're using to get into this vehicle, I mean, how does it work? You know, was just so fascinated by the inner workings of everything. I loved that. So even a person who is so curious doesn't know everything, right? So we have that ongoing hunger to just learn more.
Right.
You know, sometimes I wonder, in a different life, I might be involved in like hydro engineering or something like that. I love to look at water. You know, cool. we crossed Glen Canyon Dam
when's
over Thanksgiving in August. I'm a Virgo.
Okay.
I don't really know what that means. but my first job was in a women's prison on the west side of Phoenix. And as a male new therapist coming into the prison system, I was grilled. They prepped me. I was going to be grilled. But they, why are you here? How can you help us? And those kinds of things. And somebody in that space asked what my what my sign was. And I said, why do you want to know? Something like that. Like, I was resistant. And she said, you're a Virgo, aren't you? I said, how do you know? I was like, yeah, but I don't even know what that means.
Yeah.
And she started listing. And I was like,
oh, boy.
Oh, that's me. Like, mm-hmm. like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
Like, who are you? You know? Anyway, I'm just fascinated by certain things, you know, stuff that's outside of my my understanding. And for us to be ongoing students of life and everything in between, something that you mentioned, like our spirituality. And we saw a film last weekend called The Shift, and I loved it. I don't necessarily have to know the backstory. Well, what happened next? Like, when the movie's over, I don't necessarily have to know the details. You know, I just go, well, this is my interpretation. Mm-hmm. This is my piece with it. And so that brought that to me. I could see how somebody who he needs to know, what about this? What about this? What about this? would struggle. But I loved it and came away from that going, am I doing everything I can be doing? So we get to revisit that. Dig deeper. Try harder. You know, work more efficiently.
Yeah.
Try to grow and increase our impact for good. Do you have any other thoughts, things you'd like to share, or questions before we conclude?
I want to circle back to something that I said at the beginning, that I felt that the world is better off without me. And I want whoever's listening who may have those thoughts to know that the world is better with you in it, and that you matter, and there's nothing that you've done or have said that can take away your worth, or there's nothing that you're going through or that you a mistake that you've made that you can't get through. And that I always tell women and men or children, whoever is out there, that I wish I would have had more people that I felt were a safe place where they felt I felt comfortable to reach out and to share my thoughts without judgment. And I always say, I'm a safe place, and feel free to email, message, and I'm happy to help connect you with resources and people. Or if that's something that's not possible for you, I encourage you to find your safe people and to know that you always have a safe place with Christ. So just know that there are, I know Chris is this as well. Reach out to him. He's a safe place. He can help you find resources. If you don't even live close to him, you can't do virtual or whatever that may be, there, or you don't feel like you have the money for there. There are resources and help that we can help get you to, and that it's possible to overcome your pain.
Yeah, thank you. I'll echo that. There's always hope. And this, I mentioned this challenge, this challenge that we're going to do in the next few days. And it's one of those things that I would rather bring somebody in on scholarship to deliver the services to them so that the healing can begin.
Right.
We started a nonprofit a few years ago, and that's literally the purpose. Provide for people who can't otherwise. There's a difference between I won't and I can't. And I'm not really the arbiter of let me decide this on your behalf. But we want to get as many people the treatments and the helps and the supports and the love as we possibly can.
Seeking help is strength.
Yeah.
It's not a sign of weakness.
Right. And there's no too broken.
Never.
You know, we as humans sometimes feel that way, but there is a myth of shame. Shame can be very convincing, and it can really bring us down and convince us of some horrible untrue things.
Untrue.
Where can people find you?
They can find me on Instagram, McKenna Rose Brown. That's my website as well. That's my TikTok as well. Or you can email me at McKenna@McKennaRoseBrown.com.
I love it. We truly hope that this message has brought you some peace and inspiration. And as always, take care of yourselves. If there's anything that we can do to help support you, please reach out and have a great day. Thanks for joining us on the Heal the Hurt podcast. Please like and subscribe to us on X at Heal the Hurt USA or on Facebook and YouTube and Instagram at Heal the Hurt Nonprofit. This podcast is brought to you by Hobble Creek Behavioral Health and is produced and edited by Motley Sounds.